Reginald, how does one start a podcast?
I was first with the type of podcast that we're aiming for. One doesn't really start. It's just a documented conversation, so you just hit the record button at some point. Now, perhaps, and we'll just go from there, taking the conversation mid-flow.
I see. And which is the type of podcast we're aiming for?
I don't know, I'm just going on the premise that you sit down, which is that we record one of our conversations for some half hour, and that it will invariably be interesting. As dubious as I am about that, I think we should go on.
I see, and which of us will hold the dictaphone?
I
don't feel very comfortable holding dictaphones.
Well, neither do I, as is evidenced now by my holding it and not feeling very comfortable. I don't know, I kind of envisaged that we would set it in the center of the table, presuming that we were at a table, which we are. It would rest there, would pick up the sound of both of us speaking quite easily. But, I mean, knowing that Robbie Williams is playing in the background, it's probably best to get the microphone as close to the mouth as possible.
Yes, but we could set it in the center of the table and then sort of lean in towards it like some sort of duet between Kiki D and Elton John.
With better suits. For those who didn't hear before we hit record, this has become a running joke. And for those who did hear before we hit record, well, us and the people in the booth on either side of us,
we have to sit through this again.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously they'll overhear that we're recording a podcast and go, right, we'll have to keep a lookout for that on... How do you... I don't know how you put a podcast on air.
Upload it. Something. I don't know. People download it. That simple.
That simple? I don't know. I've tried it before and I failed.
Tried uploading a podcast before?
Downloading one.
Oh, right.
I presume that one requires the same sort of applications. Or simpler ones.
Yeah. iTunes has now updated itself a number of times to enable it to download podcasts, but I'm not totally okay with the whole thing.
I see, I got rid of iTunes at some point.
But it's so aesthetically pleasing.
This is true, but generally when I'm listening to music, I'm doing other things as well that require my eyes, rather than just listening to music and staring at the screen for the pleasure of it. So,
yes, but iTunes comes equipped with lots of visualization program things, I don't know.
Yeah.
I think they're designed to keep your attention.
Yes, but so are books, which I would...
You can't read and listen to music. You can't give your full attention to music or the book.
Well, this is a good point. It really depends on how bad the book is. I mean, I've often found that I'm trying to read Kafka always proved difficult while listening to music. Even though his style is generally fairly simplistic, or the translations of him are fairly simplistic anyway, I just can't concentrate on it. Somebody who writes that plainly should be easily enjoy it while listening to the Kinks, but no.
I see. So yes, back to iTunes. Why did you get rid of it?
Oh, well, I had Winamp, with which I was very familiar, and I've never, ever updated it. I have a very old version.
Yes, I do too. And I use it mostly, but iTunes is useful.
Yeah, well, no, I do believe that we use exactly the same one, but the same version of Winamp, and... Well, that's the one that I use. Real Player is stuck there. I can't really seem to shift it.
Well, it's really necessary for, like, the BBC website or something.
Yes, it is. Which is a great shame. But no, listen to the BBC open up a little window with an inbuilt player.
Yeah, it generally does, but for some reason, I don't think it does when you're listening to, like, I don't know, scientific programs. Or I don't know why, but every time I go to the science section, it seems to have to open in Real Player.
Well, I suppose this is presumably because people that listen to science programs on the radio are high-tech people. They have wild, maddening applications like Real Player and other futuristic things.
Yes. But Real Player is so old. I so old hat now. It's been around since 1990-something.
Well, so have I.
You've been around since 1980-something.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I'm older than Real Flair, is my point. Yes, I'm not old-fashioned.
Are you sure you're not old-fashioned? Let's get back to your suit.
Okay, well, yes. Literally, I am presently, for those of you who aren't sitting in the booths either side of us, I'm presently wearing a blue velvet jacket over a blue shirt. It's a lighter shade of blue, and herringbone trousers. This is not necessarily old-fashioned, the fact that I'm wearing tennis shoes with it, because they're the only shoes that I have that really went with the costume. As I was discussing with a gentleman earlier, he seemed to think that they did not, and that I would have been better going with the pair of brown brogues, but I don't know, I think I've made the right aesthetic choice, even though they are uncomfortable and are hurting my feet immensely.
Tennis shoes hurting your feet? Are they too small? Hold on, I just have to peek under the table. Oh yes, God, I hate tennis shoes.
I think it's whenever I bend my feet. Well, when I put my toes to the ground and lift my heel, whatever way the plastic sole, or rubber sole, possibly, yes, rubber sole, like the Beatles album, bends, kind of nips my the inside of my left foot.
Dear. Yes, I will describe what I'm wearing. A brown corduroy jacket. Horrible blue shirt. And how would you describe these?
I would call them Colt Steel.
Oh, corduroy trousers.
Right. I thought Colt Steel trousers. I thought that you only required me to describe the color, but you're having difficulty with fabric as well.
Yeah, I just wanted a synonym for corduroy. Because I didn't want to give the impression I was just decked out in corduroy.
So I didn't really think that you gave synonyms to fabrics.
No, I didn't think so either, but I was hoping if one of us knew a synonym for corduroy, it would probably be you.
Well, no, I suppose cords in place of trousers, in place of corduroy trousers works, and velveteen in place of velvet, but these are just kind of extrapolated versions of the proper name rather than a synonym.
Yes, yes. So, what topics do you wish to discuss in the podcast when we eventually record it?
Well, I don't know. At the moment, I'm being greatly influenced by Without You, the song, recorded originally by Badfinger, then by Henry Nilsson and others, including Mariah Carey. There's a gentleman who released a book called The 50 Most Depressing Songs of All Time, and he cited this as the most depressing song imaginable. I don't know, if we just stay silent for 1 minute and take in Without You as it flares, with the sounds of people around us,
cash register, and angular,
and cutlery being clattered against crockery. Now, is that really the most depressing song that you've ever heard?
I'll be silent for a moment. Well, I do recall that in the film version of The Rules of Attraction, it did cause a young girl to commit suicide.
Yeah, well, let's see, the song Gloomy Sunday caused numerous people to commit...
No, perhaps it didn't cause, it was just accompanying her suicide. Sorry to interrupt, but, yeah.
I presume that the song Gloomy Sunday didn't actually cause anybody to commit suicide either, because it's really quite lovely, and especially when rendered by Billie Holiday and the Associates. Not so lovely when it's when it was played by Serge Gainsbourg in a reggae style. It was really quite important. But when it was originally released in the, I think it was the 30s anyway, there were a huge spate of suicides, most of which were attributed to the song Gloomy Sunday, which is a fairly depressing lyric. But I don't really think that any song where someone, well, any any piece of art where somebody kills themselves or dies can ever be considered the most depressing. There's nothing remotely depressing about killing yourself. Now, living an awful life and then keeping on with it is surely more depressing, as in Up the Junction by Squeeze, where the gentleman's love marries a soldier and he becomes a drunkard. To me, that's probably the most depressing song, but, like, imagine, or any song by Pulp.
Trying to think. Do I find any music depressing? I don't really believe I do. I just find all music joyous.
Well, I mean, I've always been slightly skeptical of people who claim that they're moved by music, or that it stirs any emotions in them whatsoever. Because, I mean, I don't really remember any face doing that to me, except Ella Fitzgerald's version of Someone to Watch Over Me, which has fairly dire consequences for me at about the 2-minute, 10-second mark. But, generally, they stir nothing in me, except, that sounds quite nice in its mode. I mean, even Up the Junction, which I consider fairly depressing, it's only looking at the lyrics objectively and going, ooh, that would be fairly awful.
Well, why don't you commit suicide?
I think there's a point that Larkin made that I thought was fairly valid, that you have this, which you have life, which is a kind of despair or a state of awful existence, and the nothingness that will almost certainly follow will also not be an awful lot of fun. So why rush from a temporary displeasure into a permanent displeasure?
We're not going to get into the whole Woody Allen Catskills women thing about portions and things. It's basically what you're saying, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But life is horrible and it's all over much too quickly.
Yes, but isn't it rather like sitting in the dentist's waiting room? Don't you just want to sort of get it over with?
No, because at least in the dentist's waiting room there are magazines, and they generally pipe.
They're the worst magazines ever published, ever, for some reason.
Well, you can always bring a good book, which is what I generally do, and they oftentimes pipe in radio too, which is much better than the actual dentist room that I go into, where they generally play Radio 1.
But the point of bringing a good book is you'll never get it finished in time, unless there's a really long wait, which there generally isn't, like, a long enough wait to read an average book.
You see, well, where your analogy falls down is that generally with a dentist, you've made an appointment, so you know what time you're going to be going in. But I suppose a much better analogy, well, dentist analogy, would be that you've made an emergency appointment, and they say, right, well, we'll try and fit you in if somebody cancels. So you go and sit in the waiting room, knowing that you can be called any minute, but
you're never knowing when. But even when you make an appointment, you're never going to get in at that exact time. It's sort of, you know what's going to happen. You know, destiny is set out that you must go in and have some sort of cavity filled.
Well, I suppose that's true, but you can generally plan in advance, and you know roughly when. No, I suppose possibly an appointment with the dentist is like having a terminal illness. You know roughly that within 6 months, say, that you're going to be gone, so you can do all the things that you wanted to do, like go on a trip in a hot air balloon or write an opera.
But you're saying Philip Larkin thought of nothingness and having sort of no perception of anything as being equally bad as having perception of the hideousness of everything.
Well, yeah, that's exactly what he did, unfortunately.
I never got that. He was so afraid of not being.
I know, it seems really, really puzzling.
I mean, I was fine with that up until I was born.
Well, see, that's another point that he made. There's a difference, is what it says, because before you're born, you're in a state of nothingness, but that was going to end. That had a finite duration. It was going to end at a point. You'd suddenly be born.
It wasn't really ended, it was just sort of bypassed by life.
Life is a bypass.
Well, an interruption of nothingness.
I kind of like the idea of life being a detour around something infinitely more congested. But what? I cannot imagine.
No, the only thing I've often hated about this, I've always hated just sort of even leaving a party when I'm not the last to leave. I always think, God, someone's going to be talking about me, saying something, like, what was he wearing? And just think of like how greatly magnified that would be when you kill yourself and suddenly lots of people talking about you.
See, this is something that's so often, not worried me, but made me slightly uncomfortable. I would like to have absolute control over what followed, because it's like, in your will, you can make whatever declarations of what you want done with your body, where you want it buried, whether you want it cremated and stuff, but there's absolutely no legal binding in funeral arrangements. Your family can do whatever they want with your body, and when I commit suicide, I would rather have...
When I commit suicide?
I've always been fairly adamant that I'll get fed up sooner rather than later.
I always like to think that smoking as I do, or smoke as I do, perhaps, I'm sort of slowly killing myself.
Yeah, well, I think an awful lot of, not an awful lot of smokers, but an awful lot of intellectual, stylistic smokers have felt pretty much the same. Elizabeth Smart said something along the lines of smoking because I'm hoping for an early death, and Kurt Vonnegut described it as the stylish way to commit suicide. When I commit suicide, when I die, I really want something very useful to be done with my body. I want it either to be used for medical science or for educating doctors, or even just organ transplants, and I really don't want to be put in the ground, because even if you are an atheist, the idea that you would condone the ceremonial environment at all seems to ritualize it and give it a certain degree of, I don't know, spiritualism or supernaturalism that I really want to avoid.
Yeah, but you could say it as the whole biological, more personally, just natural, oh, we'll get rid of this body because it's decaying above ground. Wouldn't be very nice in terms of its smell or, I don't know, hygiene.
No, but I understand that. I know the whole thing about... I obviously know about worms and the gourmet philosophers that will put the nitrates back into the ground and help little flowers grow and so forth.
The nitrate cycle's important.
The nitrate cycle is wonderfully important, and I don't know where it would be without it. But last time I was in a cemetery, and I'm in cemeteries fairly often, I didn't see that many flowers around, to be fair, because the majority of the ground is covered in huge stone objects, and there's very little room, and I'd much rather that if we have to put bodies into the ground, that we do it in such a way that it doesn't take up as much room as cemeteries do. Because that's
like skyscrapers, but the other way.
Yeah, vertical cemeteries, absolutely. Big tubes, soil in them, and you just kind of grind the body up and put it in the top. Because there's plenty of land that could be used for hospitals or schools or things like that are be taken up with cemeteries. And although I love cemeteries and I love looking at sepulchral items, gravestones and things like that, they're not much use.
We're not going to get into the whole thing about the only reason something should be there is because it's of great use, are we?
No. I mean, I think that's a terrible argument, because if we did that, then we'd be... Either we'd be without a great number of things that I quite enjoy, which I wouldn't like, or we'd all be scrambling desperately for reasons why paintings are really, really useful and we really need them all the time, which I just think makes us all look desperate. But I think that land is a fairly valuable commodity, because it's gradually been taken up with this, that, and the other, and we really should put it to slightly more sensible use than putting bodies in the ground.
But so what you're really... You're not against putting bodies in the ground, just you're against cemeteries, the sort of factioning of space for bodies?
Yeah, because it's not even as if I'm opposed to opposed to cemeteries, because I quite like them, because I like how they look, but it just seems an awful waste. I also don't like the ceremonial burial that much. I think it's a fairly silly idea. I can understand it. In previous ages when, well, leaving bodies to rot in the streets would have been a fairly atrocious idea, but now when we can harvest organs and we can use cadaver for scientific investigation, I think there are much better uses to which you can put.
Oh yes, I agree with that. Anyway, as I always expected, the topics have been rather morbid. Perhaps we should go to something more not morbid.
Well, there are multi-users in this cake, which I really didn't expect at all. Now, for those of you who aren't sitting in the booths on either side of us, I've been eating my lunch, whereas Charles is not.
I have already eaten my lunch.
Oh, no, I didn't doubt for a second that you hadn't eaten your lunch, but at this moment in time, because I'm on my lunch break from work, and you're finished.
I didn't want to give everyone the impression that I'm some sort of anorexic.
Yeah, no, well, I am by far the thinner of the two of us, because I'm positively skeletal, while you're of a healthy build.
Is that what you humanize it as?
Well, no, it's not as if you're fat by any stretch of the imagination. You're
curvy.
You're not even curvy.
Isn't my booty bootylicious?
No, you're not even svelte. You're just... I don't know, you seem a build...
Plastic.
No, appropriately. For a man of your place in the world.
Man. I see. Well, thank you, Reginald. Sorry, Reg. Sorry, Reg. Just start chomping for 2 seconds.
I'm sorry, it's the unexpected Maltesers.
I think that would be far more believable that you're some sort of bulimic with your skeletal frame. Although bulimics are often of average width.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. I just
don't. Metabolism.
Yeah, that must be it, because I just don't put on an awful lot of weight.
Do you walk about the house arms waving in neurotic sort of crazes?
I don't think I've ever done anything in a neurotic craze.
No, neurotic.
Neurotic craze.
Am I sad here? You haven't done anything in a neurotic craze.
No, I've never done anything in a craze at all. Any sort of ick.
Any sort of
ick.
Ick?
I've never done anything that could be described with an adjective that ended in ick.
Oh, right. Sorry, I was taking ick to be just a word. So yes, where were we coming from? Oh, you're Maltesers. These are less morbid than death.
Well, I mean, I think sweets are generally an upbeat topic.
But don't sweets lead to diabetes, which leads to death?
Well, this is true. Anyway, diabetes is probably an awful thing, but...
It's probably an awful thing.
Yes. I don't know. I've never had diabetes.
But surely you don't have to have it to realize that it's an awful thing.
Well, no, I'm just basing it all on
the... You've seen soap operas.
You know, there's rumor in here, say, about diabetes. There's an awful lot of things flying about. People say, diabetes this, diabetes that. And until I get it myself, I'm reserving all judgment on exactly how awful it is.
I see. Well, with cakes overflowing, Maltesers, you're sort of destined to get it within the next year.
Next year?
Within the next year. Sooner than next year.
Well, yes, sooner rather than later. Let's hope so.
Later rather than never?
Ooh. No, I'm very much an extremist. Either sooner or never. I don't like the idea of anything happening to me later. I don't want to be, kind of an elderly man in the last straight of life, thinking, yes, I've got this far without anything bad happening to me, then catastrophe upon catastrophe befalling me.
Surely getting that far is having something bad happen to you, something awful. The worst luck.
Yes. Witty distinction.
Seeing yourself decompose. Well, perhaps not even be able to see because your eyesight is sort of frail.
Oh, yes, I think my eyesight would be the first to go.
You can't even donate your eyes.
I know that. This has always been a great shame to me, that I can't hand my corneas on to the next generation.
I just don't understand why, like, someone would rather be blind than be short-sighted.
It's baffling to me. What sort of person would do that?
Some sort of perfectionist, I guess.
It's like the sort of person that would rather be dead than critically ill.
Well, there are quite a lot of those. And I'm all for those people. Euthanasia, yay.
Oh, absolutely. Euthanasia, yay. I was walking through town and one of those charity approachees approached me. And they were obviously looking for research into cancer.
Are you not the approachee?
Yeah, approacher is what I should have said. You're absolutely right. But anyway, he approached me, saying, "Oh, cancer," and I simply responded with, "I would rather spend very little money legalizing euthanasia than spending an awful lot of money researching a cure for cancer." And at that, he let me go, slightly disgruntled.
I see. Oh dear. But I hear they get paid loads.
Well, no, I suppose you have to be paid an awful lot of money to be turned into a figure of hate.
Yeah, but the only reason I hate them now is because they're getting paid loads, you know. I mean, if they were just doing it out of some sort of, I don't know, goodness of their heart, I don't know. I'd at least respect them for their selflessness.
I don't know, I kind of enjoy them. As a nice opportunity to have a little bit of fun. I remember I was walking through town on a different day entirely, and a gentleman came up to me and said, "Excuse me, do you have a moment to help prevent child abuse?" And I said, "I do not. In fact, I don't think that children are abused quite as much as they deserve to be." And he said to me, "You must be joking, man." To which I said, "I don't think the child abuse is a joking matter." And then I walked off. And this is what you do. You disgust them as much as possible and then walk off without giving them any chance to reply.
See, in my earlier years, when I had no idea of what they wanted, one came up to me. They hunt in packs, of course. But one approached and attacked, went in for the kill, and
you must stay on window.
So anyway, I was very naive and just thought, "Oh, what do you want from me?" And he described some sort of cause. So, yes, anyway, long story short, I give him lots of false... Well, I didn't give him false details. I just have a very mumbly voice, so I give him correct details, but he wrote them down wrong or heard them wrong or something. And I just didn't correct him, and so that was my way out.
So basically, you treated them like anybody else would treat the police.
Well, No, I wouldn't treat the police like that.
I like the police. I don't see people's problem with the police. Well, there's nothing wrong with the police, per se, but there seems to be an awful lot wrong with being prosecuted and giving them your incorrect details. Thinking of that awful festival that you and I were supposed to play in Leitrim, that Saturday morning when I was awoken by the Gardaí, who took down my details, even though it was quite quickly revealed that I had no narcotics in my possession, nor would I ever, and that I had not yet engaged in the illegal playing of music, which was prohibited because we didn't have a license yet. I suppose at the end of the day, I couldn't help but give my details when it was asked of me. But I think most people, I don't think most people at all.
Well, I don't see what's wrong with it. I mean, this is pointless writing down, and it's his problem. I never got this whole thing of don't give out your phone number. No, don't give out your address. Why? What's the worst that's going to happen? If someone's going to kill you, they can find you. People know where you live anyway. Your neighbors know. They could come kill you.
You know, I mean, I presume that the number of people who are looking for somebody to kill, I go, wait, no, I have this person's details at hand. I will use them as my victim. Is far fewer in number than those that have a vendetta or are sufficiently crazed to kill the first person that they come upon.
Quite.